What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
If you go 6 to 8 weeks and you have one of the, you know, you have the first or second best record in the East and you think you can make a run with this team, then I don't do it. I just don't. Because I don't buy the notion that Ben Simmons can't be a top player in this league. I do. I think he will. It's just a matter of, can he do it now and next year? Because that's when you got to aim for. If you get to 6 weeks in and you don't think you're going to be a contender with Ben Simmons, but you will be with James Harden, then you got to do the deal. So I think the Sixers have this ability to wait that not a lot of other teams have, and for a bunch of reasons. Mainly because they're not going to get a better player anywhere else. I think Houston will wait for the Sixers. And, you know, as we mentioned earlier, that leak that came out, there's no doubt that came, in my mind, from the Houston side. Because they know that, you know, that it's in their best interest to get this thing done and get this thing done quickly. So now we'll look at the Western Conference. We'll start in the Northwest Division. And one of the most impressive teams last year, they even though they didn't win the championship, even though they didn't make the finals, to me there were two teams that really won the bubble. And it was the Heat for what they did and the Nuggets for what they did. And, you know, last year in the bubble, The one guy who won the bubble, you know, you can look at Jimmy Butler. You can look at Devin Booker, who had a great 8 games, even though he didn't get to the playoffs. You can look at a number of different guys. You got to put Jamal Murray in there. Jamal Murray blossomed. And he went to another, you know, echelon of player. Where, you know, he's one of those guys that going into that restart, you thought one thing about Jamal Murray. You thought one thing about what Jamal Murray was and what Jamal Murray could be. And then coming out of the bubble, you know, you thought a totally different thing about what Jamal Murray is and what Jamal Murray could be. Going into the bubble, I thought Jamal Murray was, you know, a nice player. Top 25-ish, top 30-ish player. You know, he's a good guard, would go off some nights, but was never really going to win you anything. I come out of the bubble thinking Jamal Murray can be the lead scorer on a team that can compete for a championship. And the Nuggets were one of the most fun teams to watch last year. Just the fight, the way they come back from 3-1 against Utah. They come back from 3-1 against the Clippers, which was so impressive. I haven't even mentioned Jokic yet, who is so impressive in every way. The guy does not look like he even belongs on an NBA court. But he is just incredible. His vision, the way he imposes his will, I mean, you can't really do anything against him. Like, a lot of people had trouble guarding him last year. The guy who had most success guarding him was Dwight Howard. Because Dwight kind of got into him, you know, Dwight kind of played that role. But Jokic dominated Rudy Gobert. He dominated Montrezl Harrell and Zubats, whoever the Clippers put on him. And he's an incredible player. And then you add in Michael Porter Jr., who, if this kid can figure it out, I think he's a little lackadaisical. He is a terrible defender right now. But if he can get better on that end and will get more committed, the kid has a world of talent. I wanted the Sixers to draft him the year they drafted Mikal Bridges and ended up trading for Zaire Smith. I wanted them to take Michael Porter Jr. He had the injury concerns, but I thought it was worth it. And, man, is he an intriguing player. I like that team. They didn't do a ton of free agency, but I like Denver and where they're headed. So I have them as the top team in that division right now. Number two in the Northwest Division, I'm going with the Portland Trailblazers. Talk about guys who won the bubble, teams that came out of the bubble with kind of an inflated status. The Blazers and Damian Lillard. Damian Lillard, took another step towards becoming a real legitimate star in this league, where he was incredible to get Portland in the playoffs when they basically needed to win all those games. Then they take game one against the Lakers. They weren't going to compete with the Lakers in that series, but Lillard is an incredible scorer. CJ McCollum's a good number two. They gave up a lot to get him, but I like the addition of Robert Covington for them. I do. I think Covington's really going to help them. He's going to be a wing defender that's going to be productive. They get Nurkic back. Nurkic is a good center who will do the things they need him to do, play the role they need him to play. And then I can't believe I'm saying it, because, and I'll actually shout out my buddy who works here at WIP, Andrew Porter, our social media director, who Porter was stumping for this all year last year. He was saying, Sixers sign Carmelo. Sixers should sign Carmelo. And I'm like, dude, you're crazy. You're out of your mind. They're not going to sign Carmelo. Carmelo's got nothing left to offer. Carmelo was actually good for Portland last year. Was the stretch four they needed. Made shots for him. Scored points. Was good offensively. And was a really productive player. And they also found another guy in Gary Trent Jr. who, you know, shot the ball great in the bubble. Now, we'll see if that's something that can carry over. You know, I think a lot of these bubble performances need to be taken with a grain of salt here, because people talk about sight lines, lack of a crowd. Will that carry over? Maybe, maybe not. But he was a guy who shot the ball great in the bubble. And if he can, again, this year, they're going to be a pretty good team. So I like Portland. I think they're going to be better than they were last year. Next up, I have the Utah Jazz third in that division. The Jazz, another team, kind of solid, similar to where they were last year. Didn't do a ton in free agency. They signed Jordan Clarkson to a big deal. I don't really get that. I'm not a big Jordan Clarkson guy. I could see them maybe blowing it up, trading Mike Conley for something at some point. But, you know, Utah's pretty much what you'd come to expect from them. I have them third in that division. Fourth in that division, I have the Oklahoma City Thunder. We all know what the Thunder's big move was. Well, one of their big moves. Their big move was trading Chris Paul to the Suns for a bevy of draft picks and things like that. But they also traded for Al Horford, traded Danny Green, who they got as part of that Chris Paul deal. In a three-way deal, they redirect him here. They bring Horford there, and, you know, we're not fans of Horford in this town. It just didn't work. Horford, I think, will have some success there. As a five, which is the position he should be playing, he didn't belong at power forward next to Joel Embiid. That just never made sense for him, nor did it make sense for the Sixers. But, you know, Horford, as a five with a young team, he'll be a good leader for those guys. They got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who I like. Lugans Dort. Remember Dort last year? He's great in the playoffs against the Rockets. That kid is going to be an all-NBA defender. If he can learn how to shoot and make threes, he's going to be a really good player in this league. So I like him. They got some good young players. They add George Hill as a veteran leader. I like the Thunder. I don't think they're a playoff team, but I think they're going to be a scrappy team. And again, that's another situation where Horford, if he plays well, I could see Horford getting moved to a contender at some point this year. And then last place in that division, I have the Minnesota Timberwolves. They're a team that's building. You know, they have D'Angelo Russell now with Carl Anthony Towns. They had Anthony Edwards. They have Jarrett Culver they selected last year. Some young talent. I just don't really see it coming together, at least right now. So I think they're going to be pretty bad again. That might be the best thing for them, though, in the long term. They also bring back Ricky Rubio. Next up, we go to the Southwest. I have the Dallas Mavericks winning this division. I liked Dallas last year, wasn't ready to put them in the playoffs, didn't project them to make the playoffs, probably should have, obviously, since they did make it, and Luka's taking that step, man. Luka is a top 10 player who may be a top 5 player by the end of this season. He's unbelievable. You know, we all remember that shot he made in Game 4 against the Clippers last year. He's a fun player to watch. Another guy like Doncic, who you kind of don't know how he does it. He doesn't look all that athletic, but just crafty and he's just big. He's just big for his size, and he's really difficult to defend. So I like that team. They add Josh Richardson. And you know, the Seth Curry for Josh Richardson trade, I said this at the time, and it really is true that, you know, it's a good trade for both teams. Josh Richardson is the better overall player. He just didn't fit well here. Seth Curry fits better with the 76ers. Josh Richardson will fit well with Dallas. They need a guy like that. They need a guy who can defend and, you know, do those kind of things where they don't need him to handle the ball as the Sixers kind of wanted him to do here. And he won't need to be, you know, kind of a primary scorer to the level that the Sixers needed him to be. So I think that trade is going to work out for the Mavericks and for Josh Richardson. And I wish him well. I like Josh Richardson, and I think he will have success in Dallas for sure this year. Next up, we look at the Memphis Grizzlies, who I actually have finishing second in this division, ahead of New Orleans. We'll get to New Orleans next. But with Memphis, I like what they're building. Ja Morant is a star in the making. You know, Dylan Brooks is a really scrappy player. You know, they don't have a ton else. They got Justice Winslow in that deal for Iguodala and Crowder, who should help there. You know, DeAnthony Melton, Grayson Allen, who is a better player than I thought. They get Desmond Bane in the draft. I kind of like where that team's going, and I think they'll be about what they were last year, competing for a playoff spot. Next up, we'll look at the Pelicans, who I think are an interesting team. A lot of talent. Finally, you get a full year of Zion, which is going to be exciting, which he didn't play much last year at all. They get Steven Adams from OKC. Steven Adams, in that role there, I think will be productive. Brandon Ingram, looking to take that next step as a scorer. I think Zion's presence will help him. Lonzo Ball, I think Lonzo is a better player than I anticipated him being. You know, they got J.J. Redick. They got Josh Hart. They have a lot of really nice pieces. And I was very close to putting them ahead of Memphis. But I don't really like the hire of Stan Van Gundy. You know, I like Stan Van Gundy as a guy. I think he's a very good analyst. I'm going to miss him on the broadcasts. But I don't know about that fit. Now, I think he'll be good for a young team to a degree. And he's kind of the guy, he's good with young teams, kind of wears his welcome out. I mean, maybe I'm a little just jaded by what he did in Detroit, where he had player personnel control and was just terrible with that kind of control. But you know, there's something about that mix that I want to see more. I think we got to see some more of Zion staying healthy before I can project them to be higher. But they're a very interesting team this year. I'm excited to see them play as much as possible. Next up, we look at Houston. I think Houston's going to take a big step back, whether it's Philly or somewhere else. Eventually, I do think James Harden does get traded. I do think they'll deal him by the deadline. They have some good pieces. They do. I think it's probably in the Rockets' best interest if they trade Harden to probably just trade everybody, like Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker. You know, they got John Wall now, who they'll see if they can kind of get him back playing at that kind of level where he's somewhat productive. Because you know, the Russell Westbrook thing didn't work out. They kind of shuffled the deck a little bit. You know, they got a nice roster. I don't think it's going to work out with James Harden, and I think that's a team that's just not going to be very good this year while they're figuring all the Harden stuff out. So I have them fourth in the division. Then I have San Antonio. I just don't think San Antonio is all that good. I could see DeMar DeRozan getting moved at some point to a contender. You know, they're not going to win anything there. I think it's getting close to time for Pop to hang it up. Yeah, I just don't think that is a team with a ton of talent, and I think it's probably in their best interest to try to trade some pieces and bottom out as well. Next, we'll get to the Pacific Division out west before we do the playoffs and run that through. But I have the Lakers being the best team in that division. The Lakers are improved, as crazy as it is. They are improved. They add Dennis Schroeder. That was actually how Danny Green got to OKC originally, the Schroeder deal. Schroeder's a good player. He's going to help them. They keep Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who was great for them in the playoffs. They add Marc Gasol. He'll help defensively. They add Montrezl Harrell, who will really help. And they can kind of keep Anthony Davis at the four role now, most of the time where he prefers to play. They add Wesley Matthews, who is going to help them in a number of ways. They are a deep team. Man, the Lakers are really good again. So I have them winning that division. Then I have the Clippers finishing second in the Pacific. Clippers, not a lot new there. I do like some of their additions. They add Serge Ibaka, who I've always been a big fan of Ibaka. I really like him. I think his loss is really going to be detrimental for Toronto. He should help the Clippers. They also get Luke Kennard from Detroit, who will give them some scoring. They get Nicholas Batum off waivers, so he should be able to help as well. They're a little deeper this year than last year. So I like the Clippers again. Ty Lue obviously taking over for Doc Rivers. Next up, another team that I think is going to be just a really fun team to watch is Phoenix. You know, they were so great in the bubble before failing to make the playoffs, and I really like their additions. They get Chris Paul in the trade. They also add Crowder, who I mentioned earlier, who was great for Miami. You know, you got Dario coming back with Booker and Bridges and Ayton. I like that team, and I have them third in that division. Then I have the Warriors fourth. The Warriors, man, it's such a shame that Klay Thompson got hurt. I was so excited to watch them this year. You know, I really was. I thought with Curry, Klay, Draymond Green, can they get back to what they were? Or some semblance before Kevin Durant? And I thought they would have been really good. I really did. Without Klay, people don't understand how important Klay Thompson is. For years, he has been one of the most underrated players in the NBA. So important to that team. So important. And they're just not the same without him. They're not. And I don't think they're a playoff team without him. As great as Steph is, they don't have a ton else. They get Wiseman in the draft. They have Wiggins, who we'll see if they can rehabilitate him. They traded for Oubre once Klay Thompson got hurt, but he's just not the same level of player as Klay Thompson, obviously. And it's a shame because I was excited to watch that team. And unfortunately now, we're deprived of that this year and seeing if Golden State can get back to that level. Then you got Sacramento coming in last. Again, they're another team that they're just always going to be what they are. And the Kings are going to miss the playoffs. They're going to be about, you know, they'll have about, well, in a 72-game season, I don't know, they'll win something like 27 games. And, you know, that's the Kings. So we'll run through the playoffs real quick here. I have the Lakers. Well, first, I have the Grizzlies knocking off the Pelicans in a play-in game. So I have the Grizzlies knocking off the Pelicans to get in to the actual playoffs. I have the Lakers beating the Grizzlies in 5 in the 1-8. Then I have the Nuggets knocking off the Suns in 6. I think that would be an interesting series. But I think ultimately Denver too much for the Suns. I have the Clippers as the 3 seed taking on the 6 seeded Mavericks in a rematch of last year's playoff matchup. I'll take the Clippers in 7 there. Last year, Mavs take it 6. I think this year the Mavs get it to 7, but I will take Kawhi to close that one out. Then in the 4-5 matchup, I have the Blazers and the Jazz. I'll take the Blazers in 7 games over the Jazz to get to the second round in the West. Blazers, Lakers, I would have as a second round series. I will take the Lakers over the Blazers in 6. Just think the Lakers have too much firepower there. In the other matchup, Nuggets Clippers. I think the Clippers get by Denver this year. I do. Clippers lost it last year. This year, I think the Clippers are able to get past the Nuggets in 6 games with a little more depth this year. I think the Clippers are able to get past Denver. Then I finally do think this year, we all expected it last year. This year, I do think we get the All-LA West Finals, which again, hopefully at that point you're having full buildings, because I love the idea of the Clippers basically playing every game on the road, because that's what it would be. I remember last year, I think it was like 2 or 3 days before the league shut down. Clippers and Lakers played a Sunday afternoon game in L.A. Clippers were the home team. And it was 90% Lakers fans there. Like, LeBron had a big basket, and the crowd was going nuts. And I think the Lakers will win that series. I think the Lakers in six win that series. So then in the NBA Finals, I have the Lakers and the Milwaukee Bucks, and I have the Los Angeles Lakers repeating. I think the Lakers repeat, win another title, inching LeBron James that much closer to Michael Jordan. And, you know, people can poo-poo LeBron's accomplishments all they want. You know, I know our buddy the King, Howard, hates LeBron. You know, doesn't hate him personally, I guess, but hates him as a player. And I just, LeBron's a great player. He's a great player. And what he did in the bubble counts. What he's done in his career is remarkable. For a guy to be playing at this level this late into his career is just insane. It really is. And think about what had to be built to beat him. When you look at that Golden State juggernaut, that they had to go out and they had to go out and sign Kevin Durant to a team that had already won 73 games to beat LeBron. To go to the finals that many times in a row, I mean, to build what, to do what he's done, I think he's one of the greatest ever, if not the greatest. And I think the Los Angeles Lakers win another title, get to five, and who knows how long this can go. But I'm not going to start thinking LeBron's going to decline until I actually see it happening. And right now, there's not much evidence that it's going to happen. So that'll do it for our NBA preview. Lakers over Bucks is my prediction. Next up, I want to let you hear a little interview the afternoon show did with Peter King, who you know, is obviously very plugged in to the NFL. We have some interviews I want to let you hear in the last hour of the show, so we'll play that coming up next. I'm Tom Kelly, in for myself, till 6, Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Sports Station.
I think the team that would be most interesting and the most interested is Indianapolis. It makes all the sense in the world. Reunited with Frank Reich. It's in central Indiana. Everything is nice, calm, and cool, and there's not a WIP there.
Peter King and Colin Cowherd knows exactly what he meant. And Peter King, longtime NFL reporter, writer, now with NBC Sports. You can read him at Pro Football Talk. Peter, thanks for a few minutes. John Marks and Ike Reese.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Well, as you know, WIP, you probably know how we're doing now with the Eagles this season. And so what do you make of Carson Wentz? And from what you're hearing around the league from people and just from you following this and reporting on this game for so long, like how do you explain it? Exactly what's going on?
I think, you know, Ike would know this far better than I would because Ike has been in the arena and he's seen it happen. just because you're great at the start of your career, it doesn't mean you have a great career. I mean, I've covered the NFL for 36 years. I can think of a lot of players who at one point looked like they were going to be one of the all-time greats. I mean, Randall Cunningham. I think Randall Cunningham had a very good NFL career. But there was a time, you ask Carl Banks, you ask Lawrence Taylor, Leonard Marshall. He was the most dangerous man they faced for several years, you know. And so my point is, just because you're great at some point in your career, it doesn't mean you're going to be great for a Tom Brady length of time. And look, I don't know mentally what's going on with Carson Wentz. I don't know if he feels like, if honestly the pressure of his situation has gotten to him, sort of the anger and the angst of 2017, of being the guy who led this team to the brink of greatness. And then he got hurt and lost the opportunity to win a Super Bowl. So I don't know. I think it's really hard to tell. All I know is that right now I would not be playing Carson Wentz if I were the Eagles. I think they made the right call. They might have made it a week or two too late, but they made the right call. And right now, I mean, I'm sure we could have a logical discussion, but I don't know who would argue that Carson Wentz this week in Glendale, Arizona, would give the Eagles a better chance to win than Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would make that argument right now, Peter. I think for us here, the biggest discussion surrounding Wentz is whether or not you're moving on from him after the season. Can he be rehabilitated under a different coaching regime? Or do the Eagles just need to go ahead and cut bait and get what you can for him and give him a fresh start somewhere else as they start fresh with Jalen Hurts as their quarterback? I think that's the thing that we're batting back and forth around here in Philadelphia as it pertains to the
Ike, I think it's impossible to know until two things happen. Until the Eagles play three more games, and who knows, if a miracle happens, maybe a fourth or a fifth game, okay? First of all, you've got to see the season play out. You've got to see what happens in not just one game with with Jalen Hurts, but you've got to see what happens, you know, in a quarter of a football season. Then you can begin to judge whether a guy might be able to be a long-term starting quarterback in the NFL. But even if that happens, and even if he plays really well in the next three games, I still think that if I were Howie Roseman, if I were Doug Peterson, at the end of this year, whenever it is, I'd want to put my arm around Carson Wentz's shoulder and say, listen, get away for the next 5 or 6 weeks. And at some point, the middle of February, we'll all get on a Zoom. We're probably not going to be able to meet in person. We'll all get on a Zoom, and we're going to bat it out together, just the three of us or four of us, whoever would be on such a call.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to bat it out. At that time, let's say Jalen Hurts plays really well, and at that time, if Wentz says, I really want to get out of here, let's figure a way contractually that I'm not hamstringing you and that we can make it happen so that I can get traded, either pick a team, I don't know, the Colts, the Patriots, whoever. But I think that's probably the way I would handle it if I were the Eagles.
Yeah. Mm. You think there would be, you mentioned a team, I think there'd be at least a couple teams. The market for Carson Wentz, I mean, are we talking about really good compensation coming back, I guess, depending on how many teams are interested, Peter?
That I don't get a great feel of it, of what the compensation would be. Because, look, if you're the Indianapolis Colts, the man who's going to have to pull the trigger on this is Chris Ballard. Now, Chris Ballard is totally unafraid. And he will pull the trigger if he thinks it's the best thing for the team. And he won't, like last year, do you think he wanted to pay Phillip Rivers $25 million? I guarantee you he didn't want to do that. But at the end, he said to himself, we need to give ourselves the best chance to win. The only way Phillip Rivers was going to play is if he was compensated at a level of the top quarterbacks in football. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, he was going to go home and begin his high school football coaching career. So anyway, you know, so they paid him. And I would assume that this will be it for Rivers. You never know, but if I'm Chris Ballard, a deal of this magnitude doesn't bother me if Frank Reich says to me, I want to take a shot with Carson Wentz. I know who he is. I know what he is. So whatever it takes. Now, if I'm the Colts, you know, look, what I'm sure Howie Roseman would say at a point like that is, we want a high draft choice. We want year one, if that's, let's say, the 23rd pick in the draft. Now, I'm not sure that's wrong, okay? But if I were the Colts, what I think I would rather say is we don't really know what we're buying right now. And we'd much rather either make this draft choice a 2022 draft choice But again, look, that's to be haggled over.
Yeah.
And again, yeah. I still think the biggest thing, you've got to let this situation play out. If Carson Wentz says to Roseman and Peterson, I want to make this right. I want to come back. I want to do it. You know, then you may have a decision to make.
Yeah. Peter, do you think Doug Peterson's coaching for his job the rest of the season? I know it may be crazy to think if you're not here every day. It's not crazy for us to talk about, yeah. But they just won the Super Bowl playoffs last 3 years, and yet there's still, you know, it feels like real talk that his job's in doubt.
I'm gonna give you a cop-out. I don't know if his job is in jeopardy. I truly don't know. I'll tell you the reason why I don't think it should be in jeopardy. And that's because I think that you have seen when there is a confident, competent quarterback playing for this team, and Doug Peterson can make play calls without worrying about the psyche of his quarterback or the psyche of his offense. I think he's an excellent play caller and an excellent play designer as well. And I think it would be an unfortunate thing to make judgments based on some calls you say, what in the world was this guy doing when he made such and such a play call? I believe that if you gave him truth serum, that he would say that this call, that call, the other call, I'm making it with my quarterback in mind and my offense in mind, knowing that I've got the following weaknesses that I have to deal with. So I think that if you have a quarterback opening day next year that you feel you really can win with, and knowing Howie Roseman, he will do surgery on this offensive line this offseason. I think the offensive line will be significantly better opening day 2021. I personally would not get rid of Doug Peterson.
Mm. If the Eagles did move on, what does this market look like out there? There's a number of job openings, a number of very good job openings that he would probably like. Would the league have a lot of interest?
That's a very good question. I think he would get a job. I think it all depends in so many of these places. The general manager pool is so incredibly rich this year. There are so many good candidates for that, I mean, I don't really know Doug Peterson's relationship with, pick a guy, Rick Smith, who was the former GM of the Texans. Does he know him? Has he had any relationship with him? Lewis Riddick, Terry Fontenot of the Saints has a good shot to get a job. There's a bunch of really good candidates to get jobs out there. And I think you would really have to know what Doug Peterson's relationship with the guys who are going to get the jobs are.
Mm. Peter, who's the best team in football right now?
I'd say Kansas City, but it won't surprise me. There's two or three teams that are getting hot at the right time, like Buffalo is getting hot at the right time. And this is a year when home field advantage isn't going to mean all that much, except I think if Green Bay won it, because if you look at the NFC and look at all the teams that might have to make a January trip to Green Bay, either in the divisional round or in the championship game, you know, you're looking at almost all warm weather teams. New Orleans, Southern team, plays in a dome. Arizona, warm weather team. Rams, warm weather team. So many of these teams now, you know that they might, if they have to go to Green Bay and it's 8 degrees wind chill with a 20-mile-an-hour crosswind. Not that Aaron Rodgers likes playing in it, but he's played in it a lot. And I don't think Jared Goff, Southern California kid who then played at Cal, has been in too many games like that in his life.
Yeah, Peter, thank you so much for your time. Always appreciate it.
Peter, thank you.
Sounds good, guys. Thank you.
All right, there he is, Peter King.
And there he was. That was Peter King on with the afternoon show. I want to let you hear that interview because some interesting things to take from it. And, the first thing I'm going to start with, geez, as I try to, speak here, is the idea that he had to begin with, which is something I hadn't really thought of. You know, where he talks about give Carson a few weeks to get away. You know, give Carson a few weeks to get away. Have him think about what he wants. And have you think about what you want as an organization. And because that is part of this, is what do the Eagles want? And what does Carson Wentz want? You know, if the Eagles want to move on and Carson Wentz wants to move on, then this doesn't need to be this horribly painful process that we all talk about. And, you know, you talk about the contractual negatives of the situation as we have. You know, but Peter brings up an idea there that I don't see why it can't work this way. That why can't we get on the same page and work out kind of an agreement where we can work with whoever to get you a place you want to go, be it Indianapolis. You know, I don't know, be it another team, like a team I've thought of is San Francisco, where say Kyle Shanahan doesn't want to move forward with Jimmy G, even though I believe Jimmy Garoppolo is good enough to win you a Super Bowl. I mean, he basically was good enough to win you a Super Bowl. He missed the big throw at the end of that game, but the 49ers pass rush didn't get home. I mean, if they get home on a third and long, Niners probably win a Super Bowl. And we probably look at Jimmy Garoppolo a whole lot differently. But say Kyle Shanahan wants to move on, thinks he can do more with Carson Wentz. That's a place Carson Wentz might be more open to going. Okay, we'll find a way to get you there. Or if he wants to go, as I said, to Indy, Frank Reich, we'll find a way to get you there. Now, we can work it out on the contractual end, that maybe there could be kind of a contract restructure ahead of time, where it's easier to trade Carson for the Eagles, easier for the team acquiring Carson to trade for him from a financial perspective and possibly a draft pick compensation perspective. And then Carson ends up a place that he wants to go, and it works out well for everybody. You know, and I don't think that's a horrible idea. I really don't. Like, if Carson wants out of Philadelphia, which if you believe some of the reporting and Dan Orlovsky that he feels betrayed, whatever, then fine. Let's work on a way to get you out of here that is conducive to everybody involved. I'm sure if the Eagles want to go that route, they can go that route. Now, if the Eagles decide they want to keep him, then fine. Carson's got to stay, and he's got to make the best of it, and he's got to be a big boy and come back and come back a better player. But if it's in everybody's best interest to move on, then this can be a situation that doesn't hamstring. Like, Carson Wentz can't be vindictive in wanting to hamstring the Eagles, and the Eagles can't be vindictive in wanting to send Carson Wentz a place where he's not going to succeed. Like, there is a happy medium, I believe, on both sides here, that it can work out for everybody. And Peter King bringing that idea up, I think, is a real good one. So that was one thing I took from it. The other thing, as far as the Doug stuff, where Peter doesn't know whether Doug's in the hot seat, he shouldn't be. And I thought Peter King brought up something interesting there as well. And what made me go listen to the interview, I missed it originally. Mike Angelina texted me. You know, he said, listen to this Peter King interview. There's some good stuff in there. And, you know, when Peter King brings up the Doug aspect of it, and we brought it up a little earlier before talking about the coaching, where, you know, Doug has proven that when he has a competent quarterback, the offense works well. Like, Doug is a good designer of plays. You know, and this is coming from a national reporter who watches every game, is tied in with every, you know, team essentially. And this is a guy who says, you know, there's more evidence that this is the quarterback than it's the coach. And I like this perspective on the whole Wentz thing, and I do think that idea of the Eagles and Wentz working together to move on would be more productive than this being a vindictive process. Now, this is looking way down the road. We don't know what's going to happen. A lot of this, as Peter King said, and he's right, does depend on the next 3 weeks. You know, if Jalen Hurts doesn't play well, then okay, your decision's made. You're keeping Carson, and you got to rehabilitate Carson. But we'll see how it goes. But if it gets to the point where it's in both teams' best interest to move on, there's no reason why they shouldn't be able to work together. 215-592-9494. When we get back, I'm going to let you hear another interview. ESPN reporter, SEC reporter, and NFL live host Laura Rutledge joined the morning show, and she had some really interesting perspective on Jalen Hurts. So I'm going to let you hear that one next. That's coming up. I'm Tom Kelly, Sports Radio 94 WIP. Sports Radio 94 WIP. I'm Tom Kelly. As I told you at the end of last segment, let's hear another interview real quick. This was ESPN's Laura Rutledge, who does a great job on NFL Live and also covering the SEC. She obviously knows a lot about Jalen Hurts from before the draft, watched him in college. So here is the interview, Laura Rutledge with Angelo and the Morning Team from Thursday.
We need somebody who knows Jalen Hurts. We got the best there is from ESPN. She covered him. Laura Rutledge, who is on the line with us right now. Hi, Laura. How you doing?
Hey, I'm great. How are you guys?
Thank you so much for doing this today, Laura. We really appreciate it here in Philadelphia.
I'm so glad to be with you guys. Big fan of everything you do.
Well, thank you. First thing, before we get to Jalen Hurts, how different has it been for you to try to cover college football season in the middle of a pandemic?
It's been completely wild. A year where I haven't traveled at all for college football because I've hosted SEC Nation from actually Bristol, Connecticut, where I'm there every day for NFL Live otherwise. And we're actually traveling for the first time this weekend to the SEC Championship. And I forgot how to pack. I'm like, what am I doing? But it's so bizarre, guys. And it's something that everybody's dealing with and going through, doing TV remotely and trying to make it all work. But I for one will be real glad when it's safe for us to all gather together again and actually go to these games.
Are you nervous about going this weekend, Laura?
You know what? I'm not. I mean, I feel like we're taking all kinds of precautions, make sure everything's good and safe. Everybody's testing. You can't show up if you've got a positive test, obviously. And, you know, we're now, I think it's normal for everyone to sort of keep their distance. And I have a little baby, so I try to be as safe as possible for her sake. And I feel pretty good about that. So I actually can't wait to see football in person. I've only been able to watch it from a distance now this entire year.
All right, well, you Rhea found this tape. We watched it and we said, "Wow, you know what? Laura Rutledge knew before most people that Jalen Hurts had the potential to make an impact in the NFL." What did you see in his college career, Laura, that impressed you?
Well, I think there was this idea that he was just this athletic guy who was playing the quarterback position, and that's just so far from who Jalen is and what he's come through. My first memory of him, and I covered him all the way from his freshman year at Alabama, but my first memory of knowing, okay, this guy's really got it, was when he went toe for toe with Deshaun Watson as a freshman in the national championship game and would have won it. He had run a touchdown in the final moments of the fourth quarter. Deshaun led that drive that a lot of people remember and forgot what Jalen did in the game. But Jalen Hurts was magnificent there. He dealt with, you know, losing his job to Tua Tagovailoa and then being able to come back in and sort of save the day for Alabama and then went to Oklahoma and had great success. And so I think from the intangible standpoint, I thought people were doubting that and underestimating him a little bit. But there are so many things, guys. I mean, a lot of people thought, all right, well, when he had good numbers at Oklahoma, he was just the beneficiary of Lincoln Riley's genius, you know, as a coach and maybe some bad Big 12 defenses. But if you use the QBR metric, that actually adjusts for strength of opposing defenses. And on pass plays, Jalen Hurts had a QBR of 94.4, which trailed only Tua Tagovailoa and Joe Burrow, right? So just QBR to me is one of the best metrics when you look at actually how good a quarterback is and how successful they are. And that's just one number alone that I think exemplifies how great he was in college. That's as a passer and as a runner. His passing needs development, right? And I'm glad that he's ended up in a place where they seem to know, you know, what they need to do with him to develop him and make him better. I thought he had a few throws in his start last week that I thought, okay, wow, I'm already seeing improvement. Well, his only thing that really I thought he needed to improve on big time, you know, to be successful at the next level was the anticipation with his throws. And I've already seen that improve. It can only get better. I'll tell you this too, guys. Lincoln Riley actually told me ahead of the college football playoff that Jalen played in for Oklahoma. He said, if I could have had Jalen Hurts for one more year, I could have made him into a first rounder. He felt like that potential was there. You got to think about Lincoln Riley, obviously, the Kyler Murray tie and the Baker Mayfield tie. He knows a thing or two about quarterbacks.
Wow, that's some great stuff. Laura, how did Jalen Hurts handle getting benched for Tua? How tough was that for him?
It was tough. And you guys, I mean, I think he put on a really good face to the public, and he was professional about it. And he kind of disappeared a little bit. He had gotten injured during some of that time, and so he was sort of focused on his rehab, and then that allowed him to come back into that SEC championship game and ultimately win it late in the game, which allowed Alabama to make the college football playoff that year. But he was frustrated, and it really affected him, and I think it made him desire to be even better than he already was, right? At that point, he was 26-2. I mean, he had two losses, and the guy loses his job, right? But it was the right thing to do for Alabama's offense. We can't deny the incredible talent of Tua Tagovailoa. But I think it hardened Jalen almost in a good way, prepared him for what might come his way at the pro level in a way that a lot of guys aren't prepared for at the college level. A lot of guys are handled right with baby gloves at the college level, and they're sort of protected. And Jalen was kind of faced with the harsh reality of failing almost in a way, even though he hadn't really failed. It was really interesting to watch how he grew through that time.
Oh, we're watching him now. He's also very eloquent. He's represented himself fantastically. We are still shocked, Laura, that the Eagles use a second-round pick on him right after they had given Carson Wentz a $128 million four-year deal. Was it shocking in college football that he ended up in Philadelphia?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people were like, wait, what? Yeah. But what wasn't shocking was that he was picked as high as he was. I mean, I think that he was deserving of that pick. It's so interesting. You guys know with drafts, it's like they've got their draft boards and they've got players ranked on, you know, best available and who's the next best available guy. And I feel sure that that's what happened there. And they've explained it a little bit. But, you know, it is fascinating because why pay Carson Wentz that kind of money and then go and draft this guy? And I don't know Carson Wentz, you guys, and you would know better than me, but you got to think that if you're Carson Wentz, you're thinking, why did they just draft a quarterback in the second round? Come on, you know, this is supposed to be my job finally. I've finally gotten out of the Nick Foles shadow and all of that, and then now you guys are going to draft another quarterback. But that said, just based on Jalen Hurts' potential and merit alone, I liked the pick from the standpoint that I thought, hey, even if he's not the starting quarterback, he can do things for you. He adds incredible depth to your quarterback room. And I figured that they would use him as a quarterback. I didn't buy into the whole idea that, you know, he's just going to be this athlete that we can sort of do some things with, a Taysom Hill type player. I didn't think they would do that. And it's interesting because that makes the pick even that more shocking, right? If you think about him being picked actually as a quarterback.
I'm going to tell you what the dialogue has been. We talked very little college football in Philadelphia, Laura, but all of a sudden now we're experts on college football and they're going, well, you know, this Jalen played in Alabama and Oklahoma. Carson Wentz played at North Dakota State. That's not even close to the same thing. Is it like being a pro before you're a pro when you play at Alabama and Oklahoma? Is it like better grooming than it would be if you were playing where Carson Wentz played?
Well, probably. I mean, listen, Nick Saban's the best to ever do it, and I don't feel like I'm being over-exaggerating that. I mean, he truly is. And so I think when you imagine what Jalen went through, not only at a level that is basically like the pros and on huge stages, I mean, he made the college football playoff with multiple teams as the quarterback, which is just wild. If you think about I bet nobody ever does that again. You know, I really think he's going to be the only one who has ever done that. And so the moment was never going to be too big. And I think that a lot of that, I'm not saying saying the moment's too big for Carson Wentz, because I actually don't think it is. But I do think that from the emotional standpoint, from the criticism standpoint, from being doubted and having to prove yourself and trying to find all these ways to make yourself, you know that you can go out and perform when no one else thinks you can, that's where Jalen Hurts had an advantage over almost anybody else, right? Because nobody else had been through his exact experience. Now, I do think it bodes well for him. Now, listen, he's got to go out and do it again, right? You know, he's got to finish this season strong. He's provided a spark. No one expected him to beat the Saints. We all get that. But can he carry it on? I believe he can, because I don't think, if you know Jalen, he's actually not even happy with, he's happy with the win, but he's actually not even happy with his performance. He thinks he could have been better. He thinks he could have done more. And that's always been, I think, what fueled him. And I'll add one more thing, because I know you guys are now college football experts, but you got to go all the way back to high school football to understand Jalen Hurts and his dad being a high school coach and growing up with that type of mentality in his family. His mom and dad are such a huge part of why he is the young man that he is today, and growing into who I think is going to be a wonderful NFL player for many years to come. But it all goes back to that, right? It's his dad being that coach and expecting excellence every single minute of the day from him.
I got to tell you, Laurie, you're trying to create a quarterback controversy in Philadelphia. This is terrible. Last thing, I just got to ask you.
What are we going to do, guys? This is wild.
I'm a talk show. So that's the worst case scenario. All right. Last thing, Laurie, I just got to know. You saw them both. Who's going to be a better NFL player, Tua or Jalen Hurts?
I would say Tua. I think Tua has the most, he's got the most talent in that left arm that I have ever seen of any quarterback in person in my lifetime. I realize there are some before my time who might, you know, factor in better there, but Tua is just unbelievable. That said, I still think, like I said, I think Jalen will have a long NFL career and have a lot of success, but Tua Tagovailoa ultimately will have the better NFL career.
Laura, you're awesome. I cannot thank you enough for doing this. I am now designating you our Jalen Hurts expert. We may be running stuff by you, all right, Jalen?
Free of charge, Laura. He forgot to mention that. Yes,
I'm so honored. Would love to come on the show anytime you need me. So just let me know. I'm a big fan of you guys, and this was so much fun.
Well, we question your taste, but thank you, Laura. That's awesome. That's awfully nice. Laura Rutledge. Laura, thank you. Very nice job.
Thank you.
And that was Laura Rutledge talking about Jalen Hurts and some interesting things there. And, you know, legitimate stats. Like, these are all statistics that indicate Jalen Hurts is a NFL quality level quarterback and was coming out of college. She brings up the QBR thing, which, you know, stats can be shaped a bunch of different ways. But as she said, the QBR aspect of it, that takes opponents into account. That takes everything into account. And Jalen Hurts was only behind Burrow and Tua. And that's not to say he's better than Justin Herbert, because there's a chance Justin Herbert's better than all of them. I mean, if that draft is done over again, I think Herbert goes number one overall. Part of that has to do with Burrow sustaining the injury. I mean, I love Burrow, and I hope Burrow can be the same after the injury, but Herbert is just insane. But I think Jalen Hurts can be a pro-level quarterback. And, you know, a few of the things she talks about there is, you know, and I've mentioned it before, some of those games you've seen Jalen Hurts in, because it's hard in college to project forward with quarterbacks sometimes. It is. But, you know, you watch some of these big games, and, I mean, you look at certain teams, like, and Angelo brought it up there during the interview, where you talk about the SEC, you talk about playing at Clemson. These are like, this is like semi-pro. There's college football, and then there's like semi-pro level. Those conferences, those schools, that's more like semi-pro football than it is, you know, collegiate football. And I remember watching that game that Laura Rutledge brought up, the Alabama-Clemson championship game. And I have a weird memory for things on, you know, certain dates, where I remember that day, because, you know, my other job here was before the pandemic was doing remote broadcasts as an engineer. And I was driving up that day to Jack Frost Big Boulder Ski Resort to check a phone line for an upcoming broadcast we were doing. And I got a speeding ticket on the way back. That's I don't know why I remember that, but it was the day of this game when Alabama played Clemson. And it was the national championship game the year before Tua came in for Jalen Hurts, where that's the one a lot of us remember. But this game, the Clemson-Alabama game, this is one of the best games I've ever seen, where it's Deshaun Watson and it's Jalen Hurts, and they are going toe-to-toe. I think Laura Rutledge mentioned that exact term during the interviews. They are going score for score. And at the time, you don't know if either of these guys are really going to project moving forward. I didn't know if Deshaun Watson, when Deshaun Watson came out, no, people didn't know if he was going to be great. I mean, look, Mitch Trubisky gets drafted ahead of him. It's hard sometimes to project quarterbacks. People didn't know Patrick Mahomes is going to be great. But you look at it now and you look at what Deshaun Watson's become. And Jalen Hurts was matching him play for play, throw for throw. And, you know, that stuff is difficult to shake. And that was Jalen Hurts, like a young Jalen Hurts. That was before getting benched. You know, and then he gets benched the next year. Then in 18, comes back in the SEC championship game, replaces Tua, and wins that game for Alabama to get them back to another championship game. And then, you know, like Laura Rutledge said as well toward the end of the interview, where Lincoln Riley said if he got another year with Jalen Hurts, he could have made him a first-round pick. And I think he could have, because that was the biggest difference in watching Jalen Hurts with Alabama to Jalen Hurts at Oklahoma, is he became just such a better thrower of the football. Such a more dynamic passer. And so much better technically with his mechanics and stuff. And, you know, I thought it was interesting to get that perspective from somebody who covered the SEC while Jalen Hurts was there and getting her perspective, Laura Rutledge. So I enjoyed that interview. And if you missed it, go check it out. 215-592-9494 if you want to get in.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. 2 new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.